Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable tonight talking about the top stories of the week. My guests are James Wright with the Afro-American Newspapers, Keith Alexander with The Washington Post, and Eric Easter with the Urban News Service. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Betsy DeVos was confirmed on yesterday. Somebody help me here, because, you know, we had, two Republican senators who, you know, stood up and said that they would not vote for her. They did not. And of course, then, of course, we had the vice president break the tie. Was that theater or was that real?
You know, I talked to some people about that, and they told me they believe that it was theater. The senator from Maine and I forget the other state,
Alaska.
They knew how it was going to go down, and this was all about theater, to get the press and to get this image out there that they care so much about education. But they knew that there would be enough votes, and they knew what Vice President Pence was going to do, that their votes would not matter. And so based on what I was told, that this was pretty much theater.
You know what really bothers me? You got Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, and Rob Portman, a Republican from Ohio, who supposedly were on the fence in terms of Betsy DeVos. Where is the conviction of being a senator of doing the right thing instead of just following the party line? You know, Flake was one of those senators that supported President Obama opening up Cuba. And where is that courage? Where is it in the Republican Party now to do the right thing? And they could have just, gotten Betsy DeVos wouldn't even be where she is today if one of those two would have stood up.
But that goes to the very point, Eric, for example, that are we at a point where we just don't see, you know, real courage? It's got to be the party line. Outside of the political theater, that we're not going to have, you know, somebody who's going to, you know, pull up his big boy or big girl pants and say, I am going to vote on true conviction.
I think it's too early to see conviction, because I think that
honestly, too early to see conviction. Wow. That's a great quote.
Well, I think that what you're going to see for the next, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, if the president lasts that long, is that folks are using his audience, the fact that he has a crowd out there to get done what they want to get done for the time that they can do it, and then they're going to get rid of him. I think the time that they're waiting to have some conviction is when it's going to be time to get rid of the president. Because I think in a serious way that he's headed toward impeachment or implosion, one of the other, one leading to the other, maybe.
And impeachment based on off of what you're seeing.
We will see. I mean, I think it's too early to tell, but it'll either be a misstep in terms of his business connections. I can't see the future. My gut tells me that you're using him the same way that President Obama in his first, you know, year could have gotten a whole lot of more things done, mm-hmm. because he had everybody on his side. I think that while they've got both sides, while they know they can, you know, get past what they want to get past, you'll have every concern trying to get their thing done. When they're done with the president, lights out, I think.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. Don, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Don. What's on your mind? Don, are you there?
I'm listening to you guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead. Turn your radio down. Go right ahead, please.
You guys, and what I hear is, you know, I hear a lot of pipe dreams, okay? The Republican Party, these senators, this Congress, for the last 8 years, they voted, they were like the party of no obstructionists. So all of this stuff about right show congressmen and all of that, that's crap. What we need to do is mobilize, get people registered, and they come up with voter suppression laws. We need to figure out what they are and get our people registered to vote and vote so we can turn this stuff around in 2018 on the state level and on the municipal level and on the congressional level, and then mobilize for 2020. All the rest of that crap is crap, because they in there, they're going to do what they want. They're going to follow Trump, period. They didn't follow Obama. So what makes you think that right now they're going to do something? I'm done. I'll listen. All right,
thank
he
you,
says
Don.
Crap.
Yeah. How do you really feel about it?
Right. Crap.
Yeah. Just. But you know, but and that's the thing about those who are standing in opposition to this administration and the Republican line. Again, how much energy do they have to remain, angry? Because, you could argue, as I, joked about as soon as we started this program, I introduced you guys and I said, whew, tired yet? And again, we're not in the third week.
But Don does raise a good point. I mean, there's a lot of passion. Don has a lot of passion. And there's a lot of passionate people out there, a lot of people who are full of anger and concern that they have not felt in a long time.
Which is a good thing.
It's a very good
we
thing.
Hope.
But
but
how does that translate into action?
Right.
Which is what Don was saying, is what also what you were saying as well. We were all saying, okay, where does that passion go? And does it lead to anything that's going to be tangible and of substance?
Now, here's something interesting. The president is supposed to be meeting with HBCU presidents. That makes me nervous. Being a proud graduate of an HBCU, Morgan State,
Howard University, HU.
We're all there.
There you go. All right. Had to represent. Okay.
How does an HBCU president approach President Trump?
The same way they approached, Lee Atwater being on the board at Howard. Whoever's in power,
Lee Atwater did not get on the board. He was blocked.
It was blocked, but they did well.
James Cheek, the president, did try to get him on the board. Yes, indeed. But students shut that down.
My wife was one of them. Folks tend to play ball with whoever's in. I mean, you kind of have to.
Particularly
if you're receiving federal money.
Yeah. How do you play, ball with someone who, probably would be more likely to treat you like, dare I say, the Kansas City Monarchs rather than the Kansas City Royals.
If you ask around, that's how President Obama treated HBCUs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily a done deal that, the other side. Here's the thing about, some of these conservatives, and I'm not necessarily talking about Donald Trump, because you don't know where he stands on anything, which is the thing that makes it so hard to approach him. But conservatives, if they hold to their values, tend to talk about education and those kinds of things. The question is, what does it mean monetarily? And whether or not in this quest to kind of get rid of things that are separate and make us all one America, so they say, does that mean the ending of HBCUs, or does it mean the strengthening of them so that there's more space in some of those other schools for the children of some of these conservatives? Which one are we talking about?
And that's what people are saying, that Trump really could do something that the Obama administration did not do. If he does what he says or signals that he's going to do, he could increase funding and actually do something for HBCUs that many people criticized President Obama for not doing. And that would be a very interesting juxtaposition if that actually occurs the way Trump is signaling that might happen.
Well, the HBCU presidents should meet with Trump, and then they should just listen.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to what he has to say. Mm-hmm. Just listen and then make a judgment after that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the top stories of the week at the Reporters Roundtable. Jeff, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Jeff. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say Trump is being led by the Republicans. This man is not intelligent enough to make some of the decisions that he's making, but they're letting him play his role as the rich bully out. But with this DeVos and Sessions thing, I'm asking, when are the war cannons coming? Because Sessions is going to take us back to the 50s, and it's going to be a terrible thing.
Is there any concern that now that Sessions has been confirmed that we could see a gutting of the Civil Rights Division?
Very much so.
I mean, or would they be, made into or someone would indeed take, you know, Sessions could indeed take the teeth out of the civil rights division of the Justice Department. Any thoughts?
And the real question is going to be whether or not this battle against both he and DeVos dampen what they do. If it was enough of a fight that, you know, you just edge by, begins to dampen what they do. I'm actually one where I would not necessarily worry about some of the big things that we're looking at, that we think, you know, whether it's healthcare or justice. But I think some of the small things which are already happening are things we need to worry about. Some of the things that are happening in the smaller agencies. I mean, there is a fund, for example, similar to the SBA and agriculture, where, you know, black businesses can, if they want to build hotels in small towns where, you know, agriculture is going to, they can get funded if they, you know, if they want to build. There are, you know, the FCC has already backed off of capping prison phone rates, which they had been battling, you know, for years, for a good 10 years. You know, Mignon Clyburn, you know, fought that battle for years. That has been dropped. You know, internet for poor folks who need it, broadband, you know, that's being dropped. It's going to be death by a thousand cuts. And it's the stuff, you know, we've got state-owned media at the Voice of America, which is now owned by conservatives and will be run by them, and which can now, they've dropped a law that used to ban it from broadcasting in the United States. So you've basically got the guts of what could be Fox News, owned by the government, broadcasting to the U.S. So, you know, it's those small things that we're not paying attention to.
And, you know, I don't want to champion, obviously, and be a, you know, the whole media thing, but this is why it's important. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, I don't want to read no more. I don't want to read any more stories. I'm tired of all these stories about, every time I turn on TV or pick up a newspaper or social media, it's all about Trump. This is why it's important. This is why now more than ever, people need to be vigilant and reading and keeping abreast as to what's going on. Because it's going to be the media that is going to let people know about what's going on. People say, well, I don't, you know, I'm just, it's depressing. You need to know. People need to know what is happening, because don't expect these big press conferences coming from Spicer or the White House about some of the things that they're doing. It's not going to happen. It's going to be coming from the Afro-American and other news publications, the Washington Post, New York, that are actually saying, look, while you are all looking to one side, watching what Trump is doing with the puppets on the left side, you all miss what actually happened on the right side.
Let me make that point, and I wonder what these two gentlemen are saying. We have to be very careful with Jeff Sessions in terms of what's going to happen to the right to privacy. Of course, we want civil rights and voting rights and LGBTQ rights and abortion rights. But watch what happens with the right to privacy. In terms of Betsy DeVos, they're going to talk about charter schools and things like that. Watch what happens in terms of the public schools and how the public schools are going to be. Now, you're not going to read or hear a lot from the administration on that, but that's precisely what's going to happen.
Which is why a lot of newspapers are building up their education beats and putting more reporters on various beats. And that's a very good reason.
And talk to me a little, and you talked about this just a little bit just now, Keith, and I want to drill down a little bit on this. When you're talking about how the media is covering this, I find it extraordinary that the kinds of leaks that we are seeing coming out of the Trump administration, you know, in the vernacular, he's your boy, and you're talking about your boy.
A plea for help.
Yeah, and you know that, you know, that's what I, you know, it's almost like the memes about, you know, Melania when she presented the book, you know, presented the box of Michelle Obama, and you open it up and it says help.
Right. You're right. And those stories about, you know, that people in the White House are holding meetings in the dark because they can't even find the light switch, or that he's ordering McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and Domino's at meetings. It is an unprecedented number of leaks, and this says a lot about who his people he have in his camp, basically.
Well, yeah, and it may suggest that people are not blindly following him, and it may even suggest, you know, something about the character of the people that is, you know, that are around him. You know, if there's, you know, at some point they're already saying, well, we're going to stand for the photo op, but I don't know about this, you know, and I think that's what we're starting to see a little bit of. Going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about bed bugs and Saturday Night Live. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. We'll be back in just a moment. Yes. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable tonight talking about the top stories of the week. We're going to step off of Capitol Hill and away from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and head to Southeast D.C. Rats and bed bugs at Savoy Elementary School has forced the D.C. public school system to shut down the school. They say indefinitely. They expect that the students and the teachers will return by the end of the month. But can we just get a collective, I mean, that's, you know, bed bugs and rodents. Rough for, you know, not only for the, obviously for the kids and the teachers, but it's not a good look for the D.C. public school system.
Well, first, I just want to take note of the segue from talking about the White House and the Senate going into bugs and rodents. Having said that, the school system said they were, D.C. public school is saying it was an isolated incident. One child, one adult. Where they found these bed bugs. The school system is now busing the kids to another elementary school. But parents have said, no, it's not an isolated incident. I've seen bugs on my own child when he came home. So it's both sides are going back and forth as to how big this issue really is.
But it's big enough to shut down a school.
So it has to be more than an isolated incident with one child.
Exactly.
It's not an isolated incident in terms of those schools in Ward 8 being clean. Or elementary, it has been known for years to have, I don't think bed bugs, but definitely rats and roaches. It's been cold in the winter and hot in the spring. And so now I do have to say this, and I'll just say it. If this school was located in Ward 3, would we have the same problem?
Well, yeah, and let us be, you know, honest, bed bugs. Whether they're in a school or
hotels in New York.
Hotels, thank you. Hard to get rid of.
Right.
I mean, you really can't clean them out. You have to remove, you know, mattresses. You have to remove carpets and you have to get down to, you know, to the bare bones and to the concrete. But the other side of that is when you're talking about rodents and the like, we're in a big city.
Yeah, right. You got rodents in restaurants.
Yeah. You know, you.
I mean, that's another show.
I'm going to eat at home tonight. you know, but you know that is another thing. It we've had a warm winter.
Yeah.
But you know, let us, you know, let's say for the sake of argument that, you know, when the temperatures do drop, rodents come in. And so, yeah, hopefully they will be able to get this situation, you know, squared away so that Savoy will be able to open up at, you know, at the end of this.
And have teachers working there because, according to the stories, teachers are saying they are not going back.
Mm. Yeah. But again, you worry about imagery and what's happening with D.C. and the Republican Congress and how they manage stuff. And just sort of these are the stories that you don't want. Out. I mean, it has nothing to do with management at the city level. You hope, but these are the things that become the, you know, the dinner party conversation when people start talking about whether or not D.C. gets to make decisions about, you know, marijuana laws or gun laws or other things.
But it is tragic that once again here we are talking about a school in Southeast Washington.
Yeah. Let us just hope that we don't have any reports about bobcats in some of the schools. I think then we will, then that will be, certainly be problematic. I want to lighten things up just a little bit, but we still need to talk about some of these political things. We cannot appreciate Melissa McCarthy, comedian, enough after last Saturday night's Saturday Night Live.
Now, won't you begin today by apologizing on behalf of you to me for how you have treated me these last 2 weeks? And that apology is not accepted because I'm not here to be your buddy. I'm here to swallow gum and I'm here to take Nate.
It doesn't get any better than that. And the only thing that was better was the piece about moose lambs. that was just, I really think she is the comedic genius of our times.
Yeah.
But I mean, and let me say, you know, I was looking at it today, and I was showing, you know, one of our interns, you know, the, you know, that skit. And when I was showing it to her, I said, look at the TV. And she turned around and Sean Spicer was on TV. They were twins.
You know, it was also funny when you watched that. I don't know if you've caught it. You know, when she came out, you know, the audience applauded. But when she started talking, the audience realized it was Melissa McCarthy. So it was a loud burst of applause. At first, they're like, oh, okay, who is this person? And then once she started talking, they realized, and then this loud burst of applause. It was great. And then here Spicer said, well, yeah, it was cute. It was funny. It was really, really well done. But one thing I did not like about the skit was the reporters who were all called on did not look like me. Did not look like anyone around the table. Yes, maybe I'm always looking for race, mm-hmm. but I just noticed that you know you do have some African American journalists who cover the White House, and not nary a one was even portrayed during that skit.
That's my one issue.
They had
the couple in there.
Quiet, right, exactly. Right.
What is always that's you know, like on Friends, there's always somebody in the background.
The scary thing about the thing that made it so deadly funny was that it was so deadly accurate, and that's the scary part, and to hear that Trump is highly upset about it because it makes Spicer look weak, particularly because he was portrayed by a woman, and that, you know, and now Rosie O'Donnell's thinking about playing Steve Bannon to really make him upset. Wow. And that would just be
Saturday Night Live has not had ratings like this since Eddie Murphy days.
Yeah.
And one of the things, and you know, kind of piggybacking on what Eric is saying, and there were some reports, I believe yesterday, that Donald Trump was also upset about Sean Spicer's performance, mm-hmm. and that he was not performing as well as Trump would have hoped, which brings us to yet another issue. You know, Kellyanne Conway has had a particularly bad week.
Week?
Well, let me say this, and I beg to differ. No matter what you think about her credibility issues over the past several months, you know, not only since the president was inaugurated, since he was elected, but even during the campaign, that woman earned her money. She earned her money very, very, very well. Her, you know, her ability to obfuscate, to misdirect, mm-hmm. to talk, you know, ad nauseum about whatever you are not asking about. And I've always kind of joked, you know, God forbid that she, you know, says to her husband, I'm, you know, at 9 o'clock, I'm going out and I'll be back in an hour. And she comes in at 4 o'clock and he asks you, where you been? Mm-hmm. Because she would out talk him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she had a particularly bad week when you're talking about the Bowling Green massacre, mm-hmm. issue, where she apologized for the first time.
And that's what catches up with you. I mean, I've been a press secretary for, you know, Jesse Jackson, Doug Wilder. She and Spicer, I mean, those are the worst people I've ever seen. However, she does do the thing that you try to teach every politician, which is answer the question that you want to answer, mm-hmm. not the one that you get asked. And that's what she is very good at. Donald Trump, however, is terrible at it, which is why he needs someone like her. But at some point, you know, her reputation is damaged because, you know, she's speaking out of, you know, two sides of her mouth, unfortunately.
Well, when you start talking about alternative facts, you know, and that becomes, people now know you because of that, you know, it credibility goes a long way, not only in this city, but nationwide. It really does, especially when it comes out of the White House. And when your credibility is questioned time and time and time again, you know, I was teach at Howard as a class to PR students, and I tell them, look, if a journalist can't trust you, then you have no relationship. And if you don't have a relationship with journalists, then you're not going to really do well for your client.
Good point. Good point that Keith makes, because think about this. We haven't had a national disaster yet. So what are we going to do in terms of the White House when Sean Spicer or even Kellyanne Conway has to talk about this national disaster and the Trump administration's response to this? Can we take them seriously with all this antics that has been taking place? I don't know.
I think that's a really fair point, because I think that's where you will find Trump sort of fall down. And that's where the rubber meets the road, when the first, you know, God forbid, massacre, the first thing blows up, the first major storm where thousands or hundreds or whatever get killed, and he has to speak for all of us as the president.
Speak in that tweet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And mm-hmm. exactly. And show up and show compassion mm-hmm. publicly.
And
that'll be a problem.
One of the difficult things I think that Spicer and Conway have to deal with is translating what the president says into coherent thought. Because, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, a Saturday Night Live character or what have you, when the president says something that is off, you know, obtuse or just, you know, very difficult to swallow, they've got to reinterpret it in a way that is palatable. But often what they say being palatable is opposite of what he said. Right. Completely different.
It makes me wonder who they're talking to. Because it makes me wonder, let's say, you know, Trump says something and their job is to interpret it. Do you go to Trump to see what he meant? Or do you go to someone else in the administration and say, okay, what should he have said?
Right. Exactly. And if he says no, and they say, well, he didn't really say no, he just disagreed and blah, blah, blah. And then you go back to him and he said, that's not what I said. I said no. So, like I said, they're earning their money. And certainly we have earned ours. I want to thank James Wright, Keith Alexander, Eric Easter for joining us tonight. And there is so much more to talk about. So we certainly will see you guys again. I appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR